Good morning, everybody. We had an amazing time last weekend worshiping at Liberty Park in Erie for our Sunday in the Park event. And if you're joining us this morning following that experience, we're so glad that you're here. I know it's not always easy to walk into a church. It can feel intimidating and weird, especially if you haven't been to church in a while, or maybe you haven't been at all, or if you grew up in a more traditional church environment. I know that sometimes coming to Grace can be a bit of a culture shock. People walk out of here all the time every week saying, yeah, I'm not sure that counted. But listen, we believe in spiritual vitality here. We believe that faith isn't supposed to be some boring, stuffy antique that you pull off the shelf and dust off once a week. No, we think faith is supposed to be vibrant and active and life-giving because we serve a vibrant and active and life-giving God. And so if you're a guest today, welcome. I hope we don't freak you out too much. But if you were with us last week, I encouraged you to join us for this month of August for this series called Finding Your Way Back to God, especially if you're just exploring your faith. Maybe you weren't ready to take a step last week and you just need to take it slow. But if that's you today, man, I'm so glad you did it. I'm so glad that you're here. And this series is based on a book by Dave and John Ferguson called Finding Your Way Back to God. I would encourage you to buy it and read it if you're interested, because this whole month, we're going to be focusing on how to find your way back to God. Some of you for the first time, and for others, one more time. Because you see, we were created from the beginning to crave a life with God. We were formed with the deep need for relationship with God. And I've seen it firsthand right here at Grace Church over the past 5 years or so. Hundreds and hundreds of you have found your way back to God. Some have had a pretty instant and dramatic moment that brought you back, and for others, the journey's been more gradual, involving many steps over many months or even years. Well, one of the coolest parts of last week's Sunday in the Park for me, as we baptized all those people, I got to see a perspective that I normally never get to see. Usually when we baptize people at Grace, you know, they get out of the pool and they go and dry off and change in some other room, and then they meet their families back in the worship center somewhere, and I don't get to see that. But last week, everything was right out there in the open. So I kind of stepped to the front of the stage and got to watch it. And as soon as a person came up out of the baptistry, all 61 of them, many would walk or run right there, dripping wet into the tearful embrace of the people who had been praying for them, some for many years. And the stories that I heard were, you know, I've been praying for that person for 10 years and they got baptized today. Or I was shocked to find that this person even came to church today, let alone got baptized. And it was such a powerful reminder of God's faithfulness and the hope that we have of finding our way back to Him. And some of you today, you need to find your way home to your Heavenly Father. Because time after time, maybe you've wandered away from Him. Time after time, you've forgotten Him. Time after time, maybe you've completely turned your back on the author of your lives. And yet our deepest longings are not satisfied in running from God, but in running toward God. And so throughout these next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at four awakenings that occur during most people's spiritual journey. And these are awakenings to longing, awakening to regret, and to help, and to love. And these four awakenings are something that we all need to be reminded of and to come alive to again and again and again. And so today, we're going to be talking through the first of these awakenings, awakening to longing. It's about recognizing the longings that exist inside of us and then directing those longings toward the proper fulfillment. You see, universally, we all have three longings. We have a longing for love, a longing for purpose, and a longing for meaning. And many of you know what it's like to have longings that have gone unfulfilled. You know what it's like to end up in a place that you never intended to be in. And maybe even in this moment, as you ponder your life, you find yourself thinking, man, there's got to be more. So when you start admitting there's got to be more, that feeling starts to unearth these longings that lie deep within your soul. They're so universal that they show up almost everywhere. In the stories that we write, in the art that we create, even in the songs that we sing. And so let me start a couple famous kind of classic songs and see if you can finish the words. You ready? So you two sang these words. They say, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, right? That's longing. Or the great country tune that says, looking for love in all the wrong places. That's a longing for love. Or how about the Rolling Stones, you know? You can't always get what you want. And so just listening to these songs that are popular in our culture, and you'll hear it everywhere. There's a deep, unfulfilled yearning in our souls that says, there's got to be more. So let me share today's big idea. It says, our deepest longings are given to us by God and intended to lead us back to Him. You see, these longings aren't a bad thing. They aren't divergent emotions. God has placed them in us so that we will find our way back to Him. The old phrase says that we were born with a God-shaped vacuum in our heart, and we'll always be looking to fill that until we fill it with Him. And so I want to begin today by looking at what Ferguson says are three longings that we all have in common. These are just universal to all of us. The first is a longing for love. Take Glenn Wolfe, for example. He holds the record in the United States for the most times being married, 29 times. His longest marriage lasted 7 years. His shortest marriage was 19 days. And here's an interesting detail. He was a Baptist minister, all right? So why did he keep trying? And why do most of us keep trying? I mean, relationships are hard. We get dumped. We get hurt. We make messes. We keep trying because inside all of us, there's a longing to be loved. I don't care if you're a man or a woman or a Christian or a Muslim or an atheist. I don't care if you're red, yellow, black, or white, Democrat or Republican. We all have a longing to be loved. Now, where did that come from? And where does that get fully satisfied? That's the question. The second longing that we all have in common is a longing for purpose. Think back to when you were a kid. Maybe you're 5 or 6 years old. What do you want to be when you grew up? And some said a doctor, or a teacher, a fireman, or an astronaut. I wanted to play pro football. I still do. Now, ask yourself, why in the world, when you were just a little kid, were you dreaming about having any kind of job or profession at all? You didn't need a job at that age. You didn't have any bills to pay. You're still learning the alphabet and peeing the bed. Well, why would you even be thinking about your future occupation? You know why? Because even at that early age, you already had a desire inside of you for purpose. What's my purpose? The third universal longing is a longing for meaning. We want answers to the big questions in life, the why questions. I think every one of us has walked through enough pain at this point that at some point you ask, why? Why, God, if you are so good, did you allow this to happen? Or what is the meaning of life, God? Or why am I here? We long to find meaning. And so a longing for love and for purpose and for meaning. And now remember our big idea. These longings are given to us by God. They aren't bad. They aren't something that we're supposed to ignore or suppress. We are hardwired with them. And so please understand this. The problem isn't that we have these deep longings or desires. The problem is that we seek to fulfill them apart from God. But here's the good news. Awakening to these longings and awakening to the truth that it is possible for them to be truly satisfied, it marks an important step, maybe the first step, in finding your way back to God. And so to shed some light on this truth, we're going to look at one of the greatest stories in the Bible, in my opinion, one of the greatest stories in all of literature. It's in Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 32. You can get there in your Bible or device now. It's the story of the prodigal son. We're going to mark it up a little today as we've been doing. And so if you need to get out a pen or something to write with, do that. And listen, you can mark other things too that I don't even tell you to mark. I just want you to know you have permission to do that. If we talk about a piece of the passage today and some insight comes to you, just write it there in the margin. I want the Bible to be like a life textbook for you that chronicles God's insights in your life. It's such a gift. So you heard this passage read earlier. We're just going to look at 6 verses today, 11 through 16. This is the story that we'll be looking at and picking apart all month long. And so for our purposes today, it's the story of this lost son who has a longing that says, there's got to be more. It begins with this young boy trying to fulfill his longing on his own without his father, without God. And we'll see that this leads to emptiness and brokenness. He makes some bad decisions along the way that I think we can learn from. So I'd like us to consider today 3 devastating decisions that we make when trying to satisfy our longings apart from God. And so the story begins in Luke chapter 15, verse 11. Jesus is the one telling the story. I want you to just follow along with me. And he, Jesus, said, There was a man who had two sons. Now, we find out later that the father represents God, that the younger son represents the sinners, and the older son represents the religious people, okay? So that's what the characters stand for. Verse 12. And the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of property that's coming to me." And so he divided his property between them. Now, it's going to sound kind of harsh, but here's the first decision that we make when we take our God-given longings and we try to satisfy them elsewhere. We have to get our mind to the place where we say, God is dead, or at least he's dead to me. If you've ever wandered from God, you've either moved to spiritual atheism or what Craig Rochelle has called practical atheism. That is to say, I believe that there's a God, I just am going to live like he's not there. And so the first devastating decision that we make is to live like God is dead. Think about it. This loving father with a lavish estate, a huge list of financial holdings, he has these two boys that he loves. And they live on this estate with him, with access to everything imaginable, blessing upon blessing. But the younger son, he comes to his father with a request that would have been a major low blow. In fact, let me ask it this way. If you are a son or daughter, which we all are, when do you normally receive your inheritance? Yes, it's after your parents die. The same was true back then. In fact, it was even more formal in those days. The patriarch of the family would lay on his deathbed, and there would be this ceremonial transfer where he would formally bestow the inheritance to his heirs. And so for this young boy to go to his dad and say, "Give me my share of the property now." In fact, underline that in verse 12, will you? He's essentially saying, "I wish you were dead." Just write that in the margin. You see, to choose his own selfish desires, to choose sin, to choose to live in a distant country, was in effect to say to the father, "I'm going to live as if you were dead, as if you had no claim on me or my life." And listen, this is what we do when we take our God-given longings for love and purpose and meaning and we take them elsewhere. We're essentially saying to God, "God, you gave me this, you gave me these things, and the ultimate fulfillment is in you, but I'm going to pretend that you're not there and that you have no claim on my life anymore." Now, in some ways, the most remarkable response of this whole story is what comes next. The father doesn't do what all of Jesus' listeners would be expecting for any normal patriarch to do. The father doesn't beat his son. He doesn't banish his son. He doesn't disown his son. The father takes a portion of the estate, that inheritance that would have sustained him in his old age, and the father freely gives it to his son. Now, before we all cast stones at this son and just say, you know, what an ungrateful and selfish kid this is it possible that this kid just said out loud what most of us feel? Don't we sometimes feel like life isn't bringing us what we hoped for? Or what we wanted, or even what we feel like we deserve. And so we go to God and we just say, "Yes, thank you. I'll take all the blessings of this life. I'll take my good health. I'll take all the stuff. I'll take all the opportunities that I have in this country. I'll take your resources. I'll take the relationships. And I'm going to separate all those things from the source. I will take the stuff, but when it comes to being grateful to the source of the stuff, you're dead to me." And so the first devastating decision is to live like God is dead. The second is this. Is we trade long-term fulfillment for short-term thrills. Look at verse 13. "Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and he took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living." Now, this is fascinating. Think about this for a second. The boy's share of the inheritance was property. He said there in the last verse, "Give me my share of the property." And if you've ever been to the Middle East, property is everything. They not only own property on the top of the ground, they own layers of property from past generations under the ground. This all started with Jacob and Esau, and it continues to this day. In the Israeli-Palestinian conflicts, it's largely about land. Battles in the Gaza Strip and in the Golan Heights. It could be over 20 feet of land. I remember when Kim and I were there seeing an excavation going on in Jerusalem, and there were fights going on, not about who owned the land on the top, but who owned the excavated land 15 feet down. That goes generations back. And so the boy inherited property. He inherited land, which was very valuable for many reasons. But here's the twist. The story suggests that by the time he left home, the boy had cash to spend in this far country. And so the conclusion that we can draw is that between the time he inherited his share of the estate and the time he left for the distant country, he had sold off his share of his dad's property so that he could get the cash. Now try to imagine what his family was thinking while this young whippersnapper was marching potential buyers around the property like a realtor. And he's like, oh, you're really going to love this spot. Or here, this field yields all kinds of amazing crops. Or here's the tree that I used to love to climb when I was a kid. Imagine as the father stood and watched as his son held a hurried auction of many of the family's prized possessions so that he could raise cash and stuff his pockets full of it and then pack his suitcases and head out for the bright lights of the big city. Imagine that. And like that boy, each of you was born an heir to the king, but many of you sell your birthright to the highest bidder for some cheap thrills in the moment. And so like many of us, the son was convinced that he had to leave his father to find answers to his questions and fulfill his longings. Some of you have embarked on this same reckless search. I'll underline reckless living there and just write short-term thrills in the margin. We're left to imagine what this reckless living might have looked like in Jesus' day. And if the story were told today, the son might have ventured off to Las Vegas or to Amsterdam or to Waterford or some other exotic place in search of something more exciting. I can imagine it was a journey that included parties with binge drinking into all hours of the night and women who were willing to satisfy every desire. And I don't know what you have traded your inheritance for. Maybe you walked away from God and are trying to find fulfillment in social circles or education or business acumen or an affair or maybe alcohol or pain meds or pornography. I don't know where you've turned, but I do know this. With all of those things, you're trading long-term fulfillment with the Father for fleeting pleasures in the moment. And if you're in that place where you're looking for love or you're looking for a place to belong or you're looking for purpose or meaning or significant, or if you're restless and bored or unfulfilled and dissatisfied, if you feel restricted and restrained, sometimes you make the devastating decision to say, I can find my own pathway to happiness. But one thing I know, it certainly isn't with my Father. Guys, you need to know that chasing short-term thrill after short-term thrill will eventually lead you right back to the emptiness that you're trying to escape. Which leads to the third devastating decision in verse 14. Listen to what he says. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. Verse 16. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. And so the third devastating decision is that we sell our soul for things that won't satisfy. You see, it didn't take long for this son in this story to blow his inheritance. And very quickly, his adventure turned sour. It was as if it wasn't bad enough that he blew it on meaningless stuff. Just about that same time, a famine hit the country. And so he was stuck away from home with no money or food. And the Bible says he began to be in need. And the reason I said that we sell our soul is because he found himself hired out at a pig farm of all places as a servant slopping pigs. In the Jewish faith, remember, pigs were considered to be unclean. And so here he was right down in the mud with them. This was the lowest of the low. Literally the phrase, he hired himself out that we read in verse 15, it means he attached himself to a local farmer. He was basically enslaved. You see, when we break our attachment with God, we will always end up attached to something else. In fact, he was so low that even the pig slop down in that pig trough started looking appetizing to him. And maybe you haven't fallen that far, but are some of you getting a little tired of feeding on what it is that you're feeding on? Some of you have been feeding your ego your whole life. Aren't you tired of that? How many more positions? How many more statuses? What's it going to take to get you off that binge, off that treadmill? Some of you have been feeding greed your whole life. How many more deals? How much more money? When's enough enough? Some of you have been feeding that addiction. How many more regret-filled mornings after will you endure? How many more people close to you need to get hurt? What's it going to take to turn that around? Moms, how long will you feed the need to be the perfect mother? Trying to maintain that perfect image in front of all the other moms, trying to be perfectly patient and perfectly in shape while keeping the perfect house and raise the perfect kids while cooking the perfect meals, trying to keep up this routine day in and day out that only leads to frustration and fatigue and guilt and failure. Are you tired of feeding that image yet? How long will we keep selling our souls to feed stuff that will never satisfy us? You know, at some point we just need to say, time out, this is nuts. Some of you are almost there. You've gotten to that place where you've actually thought about turning around and heading for home, but you're worried that you're going to get a closed fist instead of open arms. You're worried that you're going to be shamed instead of embraced by the Father, but that's not the kind of dad he is. And so this young man, he hit his wall of pain. And here's something key. He hit the wall of pain, and this time he no longer had the means to avoid facing it. No more money, no more parties, no more distractions. In order to survive, it says he's going to have to take care of pigs. And this was his wake-up call. You see, coming face to face with our longings brings us to a major crossroads in the spiritual life. It's one of the important steps in finding your way back to God because it forces us to ask, what will I do when the stuff I sold my soul for leaves me empty? What will I do when I hit the pain? One of the key lessons of this story is that running away from God starts by feeling free and it ends in utter misery. Down in verse 16, I just want you to underline the phrase, longing to be fed. And just right in the margin, unsatisfied. You see, his longing for love wasn't satisfied in all these women. His longing for purpose, it wasn't found in partying. His journey left him asking all kinds of why questions. Why didn't this turn out like I thought it would? Why am I so lonely and broke and empty? Why did I end up in a place like this? You see, at some level, the story of the lost son is each of our stories. And for some of us, just like the story suggests, we bottom out. Like the prodigal son, we reach the bottom. Others of us, listen, many people top out. That is, we live the dream. We get everything we ever wanted or expected, but we end up discovering that it's still not enough. That there's still this aching void inside, this yearning for more. And either way, we will find ourselves empty until we find our full satisfaction in God. The reason Jesus told this story is to help each of us find our way back home, back to God. And so it brings us to one of life's most important questions. It's a question that you will have to answer over and over again. And here's the question. Where will you go to satisfy your God-given longings? These longings come from God, and they will either draw us to Him or they will push us away from Him. But where are you going with your longings? That longing for love, are you seeking it in a relationship, in a boyfriend or a girlfriend, in a husband or a wife, a son or daughter, a group of friends? Listen, people will always fail you. Your longing for love only has one place where it will try and find true fulfillment. What about your longing for purpose? Are you trying to find it in your job or in your hobby or in your charitable involvements? What about your longing for meaning? Are you trying to find it in your successes or in accumulating enough stuff or in getting involved in the right cause? Where are you going to answer the big questions of your life? And let me remind you that these longings, they are good. All these longings come from God, but they are intended to draw us back to God. And just imagine for a moment what it would be like to have those longings for love and purpose and meaning fulfilled. Imagine what it would be like to not have to run around after love anymore. Imagine what it would feel like to not have to search for purpose or look for meaning anymore. There's only one place that can happen. It's with our good Father, God. And my prayer is that every one of us will let those longings begin to lead us back to God. And so here's what I want to do as we close. Even if you don't believe in God, even if you've walked away from God, I want to ask you to take the 24-day challenge. That is for the next 24 days to seek after God as if He's real and as if you believe in Him, even if you don't. And for 5 to 15 minutes per day to seek after God. And listen, 5 to 10 minutes per day is worth your eternal soul if He turns out to be real. You spend more than 5 or 10 minutes a day investigating new flavors of toothpaste on the internet. It is certainly worth your time to explore the potential source of ultimate love and purpose and meaning in your life. I mean, imagine just for a second being told over and over again that behind one door in your house is an incalculable treasure. And you're always like, no way, there's not. Even if you believed that there was not treasure behind that door to your toes, at some point, wouldn't you at least crack that door open to see what's behind it? What would you have to lose to just have a quick look? The Bible consistently says things like, taste and see that the Lord is good. And if you seek me, you will find me. So what would it hurt? The challenge this month is to simply open that door every day and have a look and see what you might find. So here's exactly what I'm asking you to do. For the next 24 days, pray as if God is real every single day. And here's the first of four prayers that I'm going to ask you to pray. This is this week's prayer. God, if you're real, make yourself real to me. Awaken in me the ability to see that you are what's missing from my life. Now, here are some ways that you can access the 24-day challenge, because not only will you pray that prayer, but there's a short little reading and a short little writing assignment. You can check out the back of your bulletin for these three ways to join the challenge. I'm just going to outline them for you here. You can, one, use our brand new Grace app. I'd encourage you to download that anyway, but be sure to allow push notifications and you'll have a daily prompt delivered to your phone first thing every morning for these next 24 days. Second, you can go to our website, whoisgrace.com/read, and download and print the full 24-day challenge. Or third, you can pick up a copy at the Next Step Center in the atrium at one of our locations before you leave today. You know, I happened to be at a ministry event in Chicago recently, and it was kind of a meet and greet with hors d'oeuvres and mingling, standing around stand-up tables, the kind of event where sometimes I'd rather stick ice picks in my eyeballs than to be there. But anyway, that's a me issue. But anyway, this event was really cool because Kim and I were standing there with a couple of other leaders, and Rich Stearns walks up to our table. Now, Rich is the president of World Vision. He's the author of some books that you'd probably recognize. Maybe his most well-known book is called A Hole in Our Gospel. And he just returned from Jordan and was talking about the Syrian refugee camp that he had visited there in Jordan. He called this Syrian refugee crisis the humanitarian crisis of our day. There are 12 million Syrians displaced from their homes as a result of the civil war that's happening there. And just for some perspective, there are just over 12 million people in the state of Pennsylvania. Okay, so that would be like our entire state being displaced, all the people from Philly and Pittsburgh and Erie and everywhere in between, homeless and wandering the country. And so he spent some time in one of these camps in Jordan meeting and talking to the Syrian people who had found their way there. Most of them were middle-class people that look and act just like you and me, business owners, shop workers, carpenters, teachers. He said almost every one of them, at the end of their conversations, often tear-filled conversations as they were talking about their homes, they would reach into their front pocket and they all pulled out the same object. You know what it was? It was their house key. He said, you know what? Most of these folks have a home just like you and me. And the bombings and the gunshots and the unrest started to get just too close to home. And so they gathered up their kids, they gathered up their family members, whatever belongings they could fit in a backpack. And they walked out the front door and they turned around and they stuck their key in the door and locked it. And they put that key in their pocket and they walked away, fully expecting that they're going to come home someday, return to that same door, put that same key in that same lock, open it up, and return to their normal lives as they once were. And Rich Stern said that when they pulled that key out of their pocket, you could see that they were just longing for home. Some of them had been in these camps for 2 and 3 years, and they still had their house key right there in their pocket. Longing for their own home, longing for their own bed instead of that tent floor, longing for a home-cooked meal in their kitchen, longing for a bath in their own tub, longing to kick their feet up in their favorite chair in the living room, just longing for home. And listen, the Syrian refugee crisis is another topic for another day, but for today, my point is that there are many of you that are here listening to my voice who have wandered from home. You've wandered from your Father. You've wandered from a God who loves you. And all of those places that you've turned and are trying to find fulfillment have turned out to be pig slop in the end. But you still have that key. And the key still opens that door. And so today, the first step to finding your way back to God is to awaken the longing, to identify the longing, to learn from those longings that are in you, and to let them direct you toward your Father and not away from Him. I pray that you'd avoid these three devastating decisions because your Father's awaiting your return. We're going to hear more about that in the coming weeks. But for this week, we're just going to pray that God would awaken the longing in us and that many of you would take the 24-day challenge to seek out God this month. God bless you.